couple of things to get through.
Shall we get started?
Hello and welcome to episode 90 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Han.
Hi.
Hey.
So we've got a specter-filled episode for you this week. We're going to start off with our full review of the movie, and then we're going to switch into our hot topic, which is about stars lashing out at their own films. That'll be interesting. All right, so first off, we are going to start with our review. Angie, do you want to introduce Spectre?
I do. Here is the synopsis. A cryptic message from Bond's past sends him on a trail to uncover a sinister organization. While M battles political forces to keep the Secret Service alive, Bond peels back the layers of deceit to reveal the terrible truth behind Spectre. Sure. I don't even know, honestly, what the plot really is, because it's one of those...
Hail Hydra. It's Hail Hydra again. It's the same plot as Rogue Nation. It's the same plot
as Winter Soldier. And, like, the Spectre logo looks a lot like the Hydra symbol, too, on top of that.
It's a lot of spy movies that we've seen.
Yeah, but what those movies didn't have that this one does have is softcore tentacle porn.
Well, I feel like an octopus just gets a bad reputation. Like, what are octopi? What's the
octopi.
Plural?
Octopi. Octopi is correct.
Octopi. Like, are they that bad? Like, why do they have to be the symbol for, like, every evil organization?
I don't know. I like octopi. but we are getting severely off topic here.
Well, I just want to point out, though, that when they revealed the Spectre logo, I thought it was, like, a spider or a tick, not an octopus. So, like, those opening credits caught me super off guard. Which,
oh, really?
To explain what we're talking about, like, the opening credits, which I think are actually online already, because I remember seeing someone tweet about them and me being like, I just don't care enough to click that. But... the opening credits are like, it looks like a perfume ad, like one of those really goofy ones from like the late 90s where it's like Daniel Craig shirtless and women are caressing him and then bursting into flames. And then like there's like a naked woman who has like an octopus arm wrapping all around her. And it's just too much. It's so weird. I just kept giggling at it because I feel like it's actually speaks to how jarring it was for me to watch this movie, because I admittedly have never been into Bond movies because I've always thought they were kind of ridiculous. But what's weird in the new era of Bond is that they tried to make them, as Angie pointed out when we were talking about this before, like Bourne Identity or, you know, Dark Knight, where they wanted to make them gritty. But in this movie, it's like they're trying to do both, because there's really goofy, weird, playful moments and gritty moments, and so like the opening is super over the top and ridiculous, especially with that stupid fucking writing on the wall song.
Well, the opening credits almost feels like the entire movie, where it almost feels like a Bond parody.
Yeah,
I want to talk about. So you know, when the song came out, first of all, when Sam Smith got chosen, people were like, "Oh, okay, so you chose like the boy Adele," and then the song came out, and it was like, "Okay, so this is like Skyfall, but like not as good." And basically, it's like a really good. That's basically the same relationship between the two movies as between the two songs. Like, Spectre feels a lot like Skyfall, only on every level, just not as good. It's got the same director, it's got the same Thomas Newman returned to compose a score, it's got the same star, obviously. Like, it's got a lot of the same, like, themes. Like, the villain is kind of connected to Bond in a, not the same way, but in, like, a similar, if you kind of squint way, like... Skyfall was the highest grossing Bond movie of all time, so it's no surprise that Sony was like, well, let's just recreate that formula. But I feel like what worked in Skyfall really doesn't work here. And I've noticed lately that there's this curious Skyfall backlash where people are claiming that they always, quote unquote, always hated it, which is very weird to me because I remember at the time when it came out, people loved it. Like, I loved it. Granted, I think I like Bond a little bit more than, like, Christy does. But, you know, you look at the Rotten Tomatoes score and stuff, like, people loved that movie. And now they're all claiming they hated it. I think it's because Spectre feels so much like the same movie but less good that it really kind of exposes, like, all the things about Bond that don't work. And I think a large part of it is that it's a movie that is so weirdly at odds with itself. Like, it's like... Not only is this a hero that was created at the time when we were all trying to do, like, you know, Christopher Nolan Batman and Jason Bourne, but it's, you know, it's a fantasy that goes back decades, you know, like, and it just, and then when you put it in a 2015 context, it doesn't really make sense, and I feel like the movie knows that and isn't really sure how to go with it, so it does this thing where, like, I'm trying to stay vague because I don't want to get too deep into spoiler territory right now, but I feel like it's, like, you know, we don't want it to be light and fun, but we can't be too dark and gritty, but we can't have Bond be like too serious, but we can't have him be a womanizer, but he can't really fall in love. Like, it's just all these like weird
conflicting It also forces. Feels like it's a major problem at this point that like the movies so heavily rely on the fact that like, you know, like Bond is a super spy who's allowed to sleep with women as he pleases, and he drinks on the job, and like it's like they're playing into that, but they're almost like relying on it too much.
It's like if you had a bingo card for Bond, it felt like they're requisites. Yeah. Like you have to have him drink the stupid martini that he drinks. You have to have him say Bond, James Bond. You have to have him bed at least two women, I guess.
And but like this is Bond 24 at this point. Like, yeah, it's part of the series and it's part of why the character became so popular at the beginning, but you know, I mean, respect your audience a little bit more just to, you know, spice it up a little bit.
Well, like, what I thought was strange was that they tried to give him, like, a genuine love interest in this movie so that it doesn't just feel like he's a cavalier, like, womanizer, because that's fallen out of fashion in cinema, and I get that. But I genuinely didn't understand that he was supposed to be in love with that figure, that girl, until she said, I love you, and then I laughed, because that's the movie exactly, in no way
well,
sets
because
that up.
Doesn't exactly she what I mean. Say that she loves him, like, 24 hours after meeting him?
Well, it's there's so that, dumb. But that's exactly what I mean. Like, this is a movie where they're like, well, we can't have Bond just indiscriminately, like, wham, dip, bam, thank you, man, like, you know, love him and leave him, because that feels weird in this climate. So they're like, we can't do that. Well, let's have him like fall in love. But we can't have Bond have like a serious, deep romance that actually, and like dig deep into that, because the whole point of Bond is that he, you know, isn't tied down to one woman. So instead they did this thing where he hooks up with her and you're like, okay, well, it's a Bond movie. Of course they're hooking up. And then later on they're like, oh, we're deeply in love. And I'm like, are you? Like, where the fuck
yeah,
did
I
that
was like genuinely
like,
trying to
route.
Figure out.
And
basically.
It was so out of character for her, I think, to just
yeah.
like go
well,
along.
She's
like
not
they
a
make
character.
A they make a point how like she's supposed to be different than the other women in Bond's life, and then like snap of the finger, all of a sudden she's just like everyone else.
I heard in a press conference that, or she was on the Today Show, Leah Sado, and she said that her character, Madeline Swan, is really his match, that she's just like Bond. I was like, no, that was the Mission Impossible movie from this summer, where you actually saw Ethan Hawke have someone who was female and
yeah.
on his level. Madeline Swan is not that girl.
I had heard that same quote out of the set visit a couple weeks ago, so the entire time we were watching Spectre, I was waiting for her to reveal that, like, she has abilities, too. And there is one discussion where, like, she reveals that she was trained in some sense. And then I thought when they got into, like, a Harry situation, she was going to bust out and start kicking ass, but that doesn't really happen.
She gets, like, a second, because you can't shy away. It has to all be about Bond. That's kind of the problem. Like, with the Ethan Hawke movies, they've allowed other characters to get spotlighted.
Ethan Hunt. Sorry.
Oh, I did say Ethan Hawke. Son of a bitch. In Ethan Hunt, in Mission Impossible, you are allowed to focus on another character other than Hunt for a while. That's something they'll allow. But in Bond, it's always about Bond. And so it's just getting silly. Like, I feel like they just have nothing new to say with the character. So I was pretty bored. It's a long movie.
The romance is actually a good Mission Impossible comparison, too, because I think that they did that so much better in the Mission Impossible movies. It was Mission Impossible 3 with Michelle Monaghan. It's like, that's not who Ethan Hunt was supposed to be, like, a one-woman man, but that one did it so, so well, and they actually managed to wrap it up in a way that he wasn't tied to her at the end, or later on.
Oh, I want to point out a couple things. One is that the whole, like, Bond meets a woman who's actually his match thing. We already did that in Casino Royale, the first one, so I don't really know why we're rehashing it. I mean, I do, because Sony was like, fuck, we don't have any ideas, but, you know, it feels really tired. And the second thing is, a lot of Spectre felt to me like it felt to me like Mission Impossible with more awkward sex. If you stripped away the sex from James Bond, it would basically be Mission Impossible at this point. Because that's just
but what's
that's
funny
just
is
like kind
it's
of
PG-13.
What it's come to.
I'm sorry, I was saying it's PG-13, so the sex stuff is so fucking mild. Like, it's weird kissing, and you get to see women in lingerie sometimes.
Can we talk about the sex scenes? Because, okay, here's the thing. Daniel Craig has made it very fucking clear that he is tired of playing the character, doesn't enjoy making these movies, like, doesn't want to do it again on the press tour. And you can really see that in this movie. Like, he's I would say that he's phoning it in, except that they don't actually give him that much to do to begin with, other than kind of, like, you know, frown into middle distance and, like, pretend to punch stuntmen. But it's also, like, you know, he has a couple of sex scenes, obviously, because it's Bond, and they're, like, the most saddest sex scenes I've seen since, like, Jamie Dornan's face in 50 Shades of Grey. Like, he's so unhappy to be there. Like, you're supposed to, and that's the weird thing about this Bond, is the whole point of Bond is he's this, like, masculine fantasy, and the reason that the franchise has endured is because every few years they rebooted so that, basically to update it so that it's more in line with what people want now, and what people want to see now, and what people want to be now, and... I'm sorry, I forgot where I was going with that.
Well, I think what you're saying is it just feels juvenile. Like, you know, like the Bond fans keep growing up, but they want to keep him forever PG-13 so they can always lure in 14-year-olds. And, like, it's just not interesting. I don't know. Do you guys want to go into spoilers?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Can I talk about the big spoiler?
Yeah, let's do this. Because first off, one, I don't even think this counts as a spoiler because people were guessing this as soon as this movie was announced. But we're going to go into spoilers. So if you don't want to hear spoilers, but you do want to hear us talk about other things, skip to like 5 minutes from now.
Okay. I was about
to just say, like, are we going to talk about the big reveal and use air quotes? And then I realized we're not video anymore.
Oh.
That wouldn't have worked.
So you guys remember a little movie called Star Trek Into Darkness, and then for months they were like, no, Benedict Cumberbatch is not playing Khan, and then it turned out he was, but it turned out it had no relevance to anything, because it was just a familiar name and didn't actually impact the plot at all. That is the twist in this. As everyone predicted from even before they started casting this movie,
it's exactly the same, too, where, like, a bunch of shit happens, and then, like, I want to say 3/4 of the way through Christoph Waltz's material, he has to have that big moment where he's like, I am Lowfield. And, like, yeah, that line, like, just means nothing. The line is almost laughable. The line is almost laughable because of how much we've talked about it already. It's like, anybody who has been following this in the news whatsoever is just going to be sitting there and be like, duh.
Yeah, I actually saw one critic making fun of that someone in their screening did go, like, one person went, oh! I was just like, this is the most, like, I don't even fucking watch Bond movies and I knew he was going to be Blofeld, because just obviously, and the thing that bummed me out, though, is not the reveal, because the reveal is dumb, but Christoph Waltz is so uninteresting in this movie. Like, he's Christoph Waltz, he is known for big, goofy performances, he made a Nazi fun, and he gets to play a Bond villain, and he turns in this super dry, uninteresting version. I was really disappointed.
What was even his agenda? Like, I get what he was trying to do with Spectre, but then all of a sudden he was, like, plugging needles into Bond's brain. I guess that was just for, like, the effect of a Bond third act scenario that he used to break out of.
That's what I'm saying, though. That's, to me, like, 2015 Bond. It's like, you know, that scene, there's a scene like that in, I'm gonna get it confused with the Marathon Runner, I think, the Dustin Hoffman one. I always get that confused with Marathon Man. But there's a scene in that where Laurence Olivier is ripping out Dustin Hoffman's teeth with, like, pliers. And that scene is very upsetting. Watching, like, a teeny little needle on a, like, robotic arm drill into James Bond's face is kind of silly looking. Like, I get that it's supposed to be high tech, but I just thought this doesn't look as guttural or as mean. It just seemed dumb to me.
I would have gotten more of a kick out of it if his cat sat on his lap the entire time.
Yeah, that would have been great.
But I did like when, like, Blofeld then, like, picks up the cat and, like, kisses it. And I was like, that's such a sweet moment.
But then you guys both got really upset because it implies the cat dies in the explosion.
Okay, but well, we also learned that Q loves cats, so I'm pretty sure
exactly.
The cat escaped, and then Q took it in, and then the sequel to this will be about how Q has 3 cats now.
You guys are
that is the only way I want another Bond movie at this point, if it's Q and his cats.
Ugh, I don't want another one. These are just so tedious.
Like, and you could say you don't want another one all you want, but not only is there going to be another one, there's going to be another, and another. Yeah. And, like, eventually we'll hit the point where they reboot, we get a new Bond, and then that Bond gets a whole other franchise.
Well, guys, I mean, Daniel Craig still has one film left on his contract, and even though I kind of suspect that his, like, you know, kamikaze mission of a press tour is him trying to get out of that last film, this movie is apparently doing really well already, and it's gonna make a lot of movie, and that means they're gonna make another one, probably with Daniel Craig. I mean, I think just... I like Bond more than you guys do, and I kind of feel like there's always going to be kind of room for this. I feel like there's going to be room for this franchise for a long time. However, I don't really think it makes, like, where are you even going to take the Daniel Craig version at this point? I wouldn't mind seeing another Bond movie, but I don't see the point of doing another one with Daniel Craig. I'd rather see a reboot.
I would want another Bond movie if Daniel Craig's Bond died and we just, like, refreshed the character that way.
Yeah, I think we need a new character. Daniel Craig. And I don't know that it said he
like
actually...
Like 009. Isn't that the number that
they
kept referencing?
They, like, throw that out there, yeah. The thing is that Daniel Craig in this movie... I do suspect it's a little bit of cool shove effect where because I had heard that he was like annoyed and didn't want to do this anymore, watching it, he does, you know, Bond has always been kind of steely and disaffected looking. So when you already know the actor doesn't give a shit about the franchise anymore, for me, it feeds into it and saps the entertainment value. And so like, I don't want to see Daniel Craig do Bond again. I want to see something different. I want to see something new because this really felt like any other Bond movie to me. And that doesn't mean a lot to me. So... I don't know.
Well,
these are an obligation.
How do you feel about the Bond movies, just generally speaking? Because Christy clearly doesn't like them. I like them.
I've never seen the original ones, but you know, I've watched all of, like, the Pierce Brosnan ones through these. The only time I've ever gotten like so excited about a Bond movie where I'd watch it again and again is Casino Royale. Skyfall was perfectly fine. I enjoyed watching it. Do I really want to watch it again? No. This I just
I've
thought
seen Skyfall
was
a
like.
Bunch of times. I love it.
I remember nothing about them.
Well, that's another point about that's like another good comparison between Bond at this point at least and the Mission Impossible movies. I've only seen the Mission Impossible movies maybe once or twice each, maybe three for number three because that's my favorite. But I could tell you like who the villain is in every single one, what their mission was. I just like they're more memorable to me than this. This is kind of just. Like, blurred together. I mean, it's the same Bond behaving the same way, fighting the same kind of people, sleeping with the same kind of women.
Yeah, I think we should wrap up and move on to our hot topic. So what do you guys say? Should people see Spectre?
If you like the Bond movies, then yeah. I mean, 2.5 hours is long, even for a movie that's really, really good, and this isn't really, really good. But, you know, as Perry said, it's the same Bond, sleeping with the same people, having the same action scenes. If that's your thing, then yeah, watch it. You'll like it.
I don't agree with that.
I didn't like it. It's long. It's 2.5 hours. I think the only reason that you should see this is if you're a diehard Bond fan or if keeping up with like what's popular now is really important to you. So you need to see it to be part of the conversation, I guess. But this is like 2.5 hours of like my ass feeling numb and being pretty bored. I don't know. I don't know if I could recommend spending that kind of money on this.
Yeah, I mean, I'd recommend going to The Martian instead. But if you're a Bond fan, I think you'll like it. It seems Bond fans are happy enough with it anyway. So let's move on to the hot topic, which is basically when stars talk shit on their movies. Now, specifically, Daniel Craig has said recently regarding the Bond movie that he'd rather slash his wrist than play Bond again soon. He wants to point out he did say soon. Said there's nothing you can learn from Bond, quote unquote, and whenever asked about Bond's kind of womanizing, he called him a misogynist and criticized Bond for sleeping with much younger women most of the time. So I am of two minds on this because one, I kind of love that he said all that stuff because it's how I feel about Bond, where Bond is exhausting.
And not just that, but it's way more fun than the stuff that stars usually say when promoting their movies, which is, oh, it's such an honor to play this iconic character. Yeah, we had so much fun on set. So it's, like, kind of fun to just totally. To watch this guy just, like, rip into it. And as you said, nothing he's saying
it's nice hearing someone be, like, honest, even if it's brutally so. But, you know, when someone says something like that, and especially someone who is as in the public eye as Daniel Craig and this franchise, it's going to color the way you see the character on screen. It's like what you brought up before about, you know, Bond is this super confident guy who could like look like he's just chilling even when there's gunfire all around. To me, knowing how Daniel Craig feels about playing this character, I kept looking at that and not saying like, you're cool and you got this shit under control, but rather you look bored. Maybe you should be done with this.
I feel like this is the shit you say like 3-4 months from now when you're promoting a different movie. I feel like it's not fair to all the people who worked on the movie to talk shit on it now. You know what I mean? Because it's like, I don't know. It seems kind of disloyal to me, to be perfectly honest. I mean, like, yeah, they're being truthful, but that's not what they're paid for when they do these interviews. Like, they're being paid to promote the movie.
Yeah, I mean, part of the star's job, and in this case, you know, he's the star. This franchise at this moment is built around him. Part of his job is promoting it so that, you know, not just so he can get more money and do a sequel, but because there are, like, hundreds or thousands of other people whose jobs depend on some degree to his being able to sell this movie. So, like, I am watching Daniel Craig and I'm spectacularly entertained, and I actually do think he makes some great points. But at the same time, like, you know, a lot of people worked hard in this movie, and as you said, it's just, it seems like it's like shitting on their work. And then there's
people care too. I mean, look at how big this franchise is. It has like millions and millions and millions of diehard fans who are just like so deeply into this stuff.
That's the other thing that I wanted to bring up. It's not just disrespectful to the people that worked on this movie, you know, it's also kind of sad for the fans. Like, he's the guy that right now to them represents, like, you know, the epitome of like, oh my god, this is like this thing that I love, and then to have him shit on it is kind of sad. It actually reminds me a little bit of like, we've seen other stars do this a little bit before. Chris Evans was for a while very unhappy to be Captain America, it seemed like, but more than that, like, Robert Pattinson, like, hated the Twilight movies. Like, Jamie Dornan didn't seem at all happy to
Robert Pattinson and Jamie Dornan somewhat have an excuse to feel that way. Maybe not, like, outright, you know, shame the movies, because it's not right for the other people working on it and for the fans, but they were also, like, in a little bit of a weird situation, just like, I mean, as people walking around, like, were, like, you know, flipping them off everywhere they go and, like, saying trash things about them. Well, like,
Robert Pattinson, I understand more than Jamie Dornan. Because Pattinson, like, he signed on to that when he was pretty young and no one knew how big Twilight was going to get. So, and also, if he wanted to continue working, he had to distance himself from Twilight. So, like, I kind of get his reaction. Jamie Dornan, though, he went through that whole press tour like he had shit in his pants. He just looked unhappy.
Well, they did off. They all? Wasn't that whole, like, everybody?
If she wasn't with him, she
that.
Seemed okay.
Dakota sold it, or she tried to.
Yeah. Like, she seemed way more professional than he did, because he flat out said stuff like, well, I don't want to be thought of in this way and whatever. And I was like, yo, for the record, you're famous because you played, like, a serial rapist and murderer on a TV show, and you don't want to be known as the BDSM guy? Like, get over yourself. It's such a fucking weird way
and
to
it's
behave.
It's almost like people, I don't think people would give him that label if he didn't make a point of, like, trying to, like, push it away so hard, you know?
No, I think he'd get it, because he's, you know, you're playing the fit. You are playing the poster boy of suburban BDSM.
I think that he made it, he amplified it even more by, like, making such a clear point about it, being such an ass about it.
I just feel like there's, I don't know what the guide is to talking shit on your own projects, but, like, at least when, like, Jim Carrey did it over Kick-Ass 2, it was specifically because he hit a point where he went from being excited about the movie to being like, I don't want to promote gun culture anymore, and I realize that I'm doing that, and, like, the way he went about it was bizarre, but I could at least understand his motivation, where, like, you know, I understand that Daniel Craig might be frustrated that he's still in a contract for these movies that he doesn't want to make anymore, and I think I'm with Angie, where I feel like he's either pushing to get broken out of his contract or to have major changes to the next script, whatever it may be, but it does seem like, you know, it seems like he knew this movie was going to be successful anyway, so he's like, fuck it, I'm just going to say what I want to say, well, and, like, there's something kind of unprofessional about that, honestly, because, like, it's not just their job to be an actor. When you're that level of star, your job is promoting the fucking movie.
Yeah, I mean, they might not like it, but that's true. But, I mean, you could argue that Daniel Craig is also making a principal stand, because he's standing up against, you know, how sexist Bond has traditionally been.
Well, then he should start donating some money to a woman's cause or something and not just talk.
He's, like, done, like, domestic violence PSAs and stuff. Like, he actually is. I don't know, like, I'm not saying he's, like, you know, I'm not saying he's a feminist icon, but I'm saying, you know, I think he's sincere in that. I just think it's also tied to his hating making these movies.
Yeah, I think it does speak to that. I mean, but Angie and I, you and I have talked a lot, just G-chatting back and forth about celebrities who are willing to say the right thing, but then you wonder, is it just easier? So, I don't know. I kind of feel like maybe he's trying to carve a path where, like, he can still, you know, do work that isn't just Bond-related. And I don't blame him for that, but I feel like there was a more tactful, less shitting on everything way of doing it.
Yeah,
well, agreed. Movie's still going to make a ton of money. We're still going to get more of them, and he's stuck with one of them.
Yeah, Skyfall is the highest-grossing British-made film ever.
Yeah, and this one, I think they said this is on track not to do as well as Skyfall, but, like, you know, not that far behind.
Alrighty, so that is a wrap on episode 90 of Popcorn and Prosecco. You can find us on iTunes, where it would be great if you could subscribe and also comment and rate us over there. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. You can like us on Facebook. We also have our Twitter, Popcorn Prosecco, and all three of us are all over the internet as well. Angie, you want to go first?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
Christy?
And I'm at Christy Puchko on Twitter. That's KristyPuchko. And I write all over the interwebs, but you can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
And you can catch my writing on collider.com, and my Twitter handle is pnemiroff. So thank you all so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
I came here to kill you.
And I thought you came here to die.